podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are. This is the SB Live Washington podcast, a weekly conversation about high school sports across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, statewide preps reporter, and joining me as usual, senior reporter, your pal and mine, Todd Millis. And Dan Dickow's here. He's the host of the ISO podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. We've got COVID, we've got forest fires, we've got rallies, just waiting for locusts and the rest of what's to come. You guys, how are you holding up with everything that's going on, especially, you know, considering what the West Coast is going through right now?
Yeah, luckily over here in Spokane, the air quality has been fine. There's been a couple days with some smoke, but we've been spared for the most part with the smoke and the fires in the Spokane area outside of Malden, just south of here, that, you know, had some devastation. But you know, it's sad to see everything going on in Oregon, Washington, Northern California. I just pray that, you know, there's not loss of life and that, you know, the firefighters can be appreciated for all the hard work they're doing, because I know they're giving it their all.
What is going on in the world, guys? I mean, Pierce County has been hit absolutely hard by wildfire. We had a guy arrested yesterday trying to literally start a fire. A fire in between the grass in between the freeways. I mean, it's a crazy world right now. Pierce County is hit pretty hard, and the air quality has been pretty poor. And I know there's other parts of the state have as well. But I mean, literally somebody arrested for trying to start another wildfire. It blows my mind what's going on in the world today.
I mean, I know we got to get on topic with high school sports and our focus, but are you serious, Todd? I mean, I'm not questioning you. I know you stay on top of everything, but that person needs to be, you know, he needs to be thrown in jail for a long time, because that's absolutely ridiculous. That's, you know, that's a, without getting too political, that's a screenshot of a lot of the problems in this world right now and in our country, is having no respect for what other people own or what other people have. And just kind of doing something because you want to do it. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. It really, really is. All right. Let's go, Andy.
No kidding. I hope, you know, listeners of this podcast, whichever corner you're tuning in from of the state of Washington, as we talk about how high school sports are going to return, some of the efforts for in hopes for their early return. Bottom line is, we hope everybody is staying safe and are thinking and praying about those who are being faced with these fires and with COVID and everything that's going on. So as we get into it, last week we talked about on this podcast a student-fueled petition that gained over 30,000 signatures in hopes to resume the high school sports season. There was a petition. There was a rally on Thursday. Todd, you and I were there. This week, they're spinning it forward, hosting an open forum on Zoom Friday morning in hopes to gain clarity and hopefully a resolution for fall sports participation. That's a quote from this group, the Student Athletes of Washington. At this point, the governor's office confirmed it's going to have a representative there. The WIAA, I'm told, will not, as it spoke at length of where the power rests in resuming the fall sports season before the rally last week. That happened on a Zoom call with reporters. You can find a recap of that call and the whole call on the site, scorebookclub.com/Washington. But I want to talk to you guys about what could come of this meeting. But first, it's been a week since this rally. Just under 150 people showed up at the state capitol. Students spoke families, parents. There was representatives from different corners of the west side of the state. Todd, you and I were there covering it. What were your guys' takeaways from the rally at Olympia a week ago?
A good thing. I mean, these student athletes, some of them very with a lot of high visibility on a national scale, using their voices to talk about their senior seasons and some of the things going around in the country and why is Washington lagging behind and seemingly in while 35 plus states, other states are in fall sports. I thought what was presented on the steps of the Capitol building was eloquent. It wasn't too crazy. I thought it was a well done presentation, less than an hour in Olympia with these guys. And secondly, as we've seen in some of the fallout, you add a little pressure and you see, I don't want to say cracks, but people are sort of looking at one another going like, who's in charge here? We're getting some interesting feedback from some of the state powers to be. I think it's great. You keep applying a little bit pressure. It might not happen for these guys in this fall, but I think what they need to do is protect 2021. If football is on the table for 2021, a little pressure on these state powers to be saying, we're not going to lose football for my senior season. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I love the fact, again, and we touched on it last podcast, the fact that they are using their voice, like Todd mentioned. And I think this is a valuable lesson for a lot of young people is, they're going about it the right way to try to let their voice known, where the easy thing would be to do is not do things in a positive manner, in a kind of scripted manner, the way they're doing it, and then come back 3-4 months later and gripe and complain and potentially try to sue the WIA or the governor's office, whatever it might be, because they're being proactive to let people know they're willing to follow guidelines and steps and be a part of the solution, as opposed to not offering a solution, not wanting to work to figure something out, and then come gripe and complain later on. So I love that fact. And there's been a couple other states in the last week or so that have changed course and are opening fall sports. I believe it was Michigan, and it might have been Colorado. Andy, you guys would know better than me probably, because I think you've retweeted or posted things in regards to that. But then Connecticut, I believe, also had a really big student rally as well. So, hopefully it's like you said, Todd, putting some pressure on the right people to, have some hard conversations and give true guidance as to why are they not playing or what we need to do to begin playing, because, there are a lot of senior athletes that are going to be missing out on some of the best memories of their life.
Yeah, some incredible footage that came out of Connecticut that you alluded to, Dan. A similar rally took place with the chorus of "Let Us Play" directed at that state's governor. And I just retweeted it this morning. It happened yesterday, but I didn't see it until this morning. But I mean, the crowd size there with athletes and coaches and parents and supporters of letting high school sports resume. The crowd size there, last week in Olympia paled in comparison to what's happening in Connecticut right now. But, we know the palpable energy that's coming out of this group, this student athlete group. And we'll see what's going to happen on Friday. So this is going to be an open forum. It's going to be on Zoom. I'm assuming the way that it was structured last week was Tracy Ford, a trainer, Bellevue-based, a Ford Sports Performance. He kind of led things. He was the MC of the rally. He spoke in between every student speaker. Each student speaker was incredibly prepared, I'll say. I mean, Todd can vouch for that, and tackled a different topic. And so I'm curious to see what's gonna come of the open forum on Friday. What do you guys think will come of it? It sounds like they might not get everybody there they want. Coaches, district superintendents, representatives from the Department of Health. We don't know if those types of folks that they've requested will be there, but we do know that at least somebody from the governor's office will be there. What do you guys think is going to come of this open forum tomorrow?
Hopefully passion in student athletes, coaches, and parents' voices that can hopefully influence and persuade the people that are ultimately going to come up with the final decisions to, you know, reopen high school sports or open it quicker. I think if you look at 35 other states are playing, there is a blueprint for how to get it done. And if I'm correct in this fact I'm about to say, and I believe I am because I've read it on a number of different places, there have been zero reported cases from over 1,000 football games already played this fall. Is that right, guys? Have you seen that stat as well?
I've seen something similar. I'm not exactly sure if it's zero reported cases or zero super spreads. But yeah.
Well, the fact of the matter is if there's a guideline and a blueprint that's working in these other states, why can't we try to follow it here in the state of Washington? I want to see these kids play. I like the way they're going about it. They seem to be very organized, respectful, and trying to do things the right way. And you mentioned Tracy Ford. You know, he sounds like he's doing a very good job as a mentor to a lot of these kids on the football side and helping them learn the game of life, not just football.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I agree. I think tone of this conference call is going to be a big thing. You talked about sharing passion, Dan, and I think you can do that, but not sort of be in your face. I think you can be firm, but I think if they go in pointing fingers and telling the state associations and the state powers to be what to do, I think they're going to face a brick wall. And it's good that the governor's office has agreed to be part of this, to listen. I just think they have to be passionate. They have to be patient. They have to be factual. There's a lot of numbers floating around right now, and it's hard to know what to believe in terms of, you know, COVID. Right now we're right in the middle of Idaho, and I've talked to some coaches who have had to go through COVID quarantine with some of their players during training camp. So, I mean, it happens, and to see if, to really know if there's any COVID cases, you know, across the country from games. I mean, I'm a little skeptical of that number, but the point is there seems to be a way, Dan, like you said, there seems to be a blueprint that's working. And so listen, if I were these student athletes and coaches, I would just say, hey, let's leave the door open. Let's just gather more data. What's going on around the country. I think the next 2 weeks with the states that are playing are critical for this argument, for this movement to play in 2020. I think if they can just convince the state powers to be hey, let's leave the door open. Let's see what goes on for the rest of September. And if the trends continue the way they're trending, then let's just revisit this and let's go for it. There's no guarantees for 2021. And I think that's what they're trying to protect here. I just think they have to do it in a manner that is cohesive, and inviting for these state powers to be willing to listen and not just sort of shut them out.
The group consists of mostly football players, although one soccer player spoke last week, a girls soccer player spoke at the rally last week. Football has been a key focus and has been in the spotlight in this within this group because it's made up of, you know, mostly high-profile football recruits. But what they're fighting for, they say, is all fall sports, and that may bear a reality as we go on. You know, like we've said before, and you know, this is something that, you know, the WIA agrees with. I'm sure the Department of Health agrees with. The more we see, the more time goes on, and the more football that's played, the more volleyball that's played, more sports are played in the 30-some states across the country where they are happening right now. The more data and information we're going to have and is being shared with the State Department of Health in Washington, that's going to just prove the case. That's only going to help, you know, provide more accurate data for sports to return. Now, do we all expect that after tomorrow's open forum, with this SAW group that the light switch is going to be flipped on and the season's going to be resumed? No, I don't think anybody expects that. But is this something that's going to take a step in the right direction and going to help sports come back eventually? I think, you know, that's where we might see some positive ground gain. So we are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Todd and I are going to take a deeper look at three burning questions the WIAA is looking at this fall as it continues to navigate how to bring back fall sports. Dan is going to get out of here. Dan, I appreciate your time as always. How's the ISO going? We know that that three episodes come out every week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Is there anything that that listeners of this podcast should keep their eye out for?
Absolutely. This week we had a couple of really good episodes. Eric Musselman, head coach at Arkansas. Casey Jacobson, who spent 5 years in the NBA, was a star at Stanford, has joined. And then we're releasing end of this week a really interesting and unique conversation with a good friend of mine. He's an assistant coach at Denver University. He spent about 15 years in the NBA in a number of different capacities, from video coordinator all the way to assistant coach. His name's Ramon Spasato, and he's a guy that I think for a lot of young kids out there that think they want to get into coaching, you're going to have some nuggets about his path and some ways to be mindful of how to grow your career. So those are coming out. We've got Lorenzo Romar on deck. Coach Few is going to come on soon. The one that you might be most interested in, Andy, is the professor from the And One Mixtape Tour. I'm going to be recording an interview with him next week. Actually, I believe this week I will interview him, and we'll release it in a week or two. His journey from small town in Oregon to global basketball icon, it should be fascinating.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love the professor.
Yes. And yes. Mixtape tours, the amount of hours I spent as a kid watching those. But going back, I mean, before we get out of here, that Jake, your interview with Casey Jacobson, that's you can find in the podcast feed right now, it's live. That story he had about the game winner for Stanford with Tiger Woods in the front row, and finding that picture of Tiger celebrating in the background, that's just like one of the greatest moments and stories that's been shared on your podcast. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, how cool is that for somebody at the time who was probably 20, maybe 21 years old, and you have maybe the biggest sports icon in the world at the moment sitting courtside, you hit a big shot, and the passion and the emotion that Tiger Woods showed after that ball went in, that was a really cool story to hear firsthand from Casey.
Absolutely. It's called the ISO Podcast with Dan Dickow. It's, you can find it wherever you get podcasts, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network and SB Live Sports. We're going to take a quick break, but stick with us. When we come back, Todd and I are going to dive deep into three burning questions the WIAA has.
Reaching the peak of any profession is hard, but it's especially challenging in the sports world. Hey everyone, Dan Dickow here. I want to tell you about my new podcast, The ISO, with me, Dan Dickow. Brought to you by SB Live Sports and the Believe Podcast Network. Over my playing career from Prairie High School to Gonzaga University to six seasons in the NBA, I've gotten to know professionals from all backgrounds and hear their stories. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday as I interview athletes, coaches, front office executives, and more. Listen to untold stories, unique experiences, and fantastic advice. Subscribe to the ISO by going to wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating and review us while you're there. It's easy, it's free, and trust me, it's worth it.
Welcome back to the SB Live Washington podcast. I'm Andy Bueller. Joining me is Todd Millis. Again, your pal and mine. We're going to take a look. We touched on in the first segment the efforts that are being made by student athletes requesting that the governor, the Department of Health, and the powers that be resume the high school athletic season. While Washington is you know, in the minority of states across the country in deciding to not play fall sports, pushing the high school sports calendar all into 2021. as schools around the country in more than 35 states play, the WIAA, the State Department of Health in Washington, are taking a very close look at how that's going and how high school athletics can take place across this country with limited risk to kids, limited risk for the spread of this virus. So we're going to take a look at three burning questions that the WIAA is hoping to get answered this fall as it continues to navigate how to bring back sports. So question one, Todd, could schools be allowed to practice soon? Hold practice at schools. Right now, public schools across the state, the buildings are closed. They can't host workouts. Coaches can't have teams even in early stage guidelines. So right now, private schools like O'Day, like Kennedy Catholic, can host because they're not under the purview of the Department of Education when it comes to, they're not a public school. They're under the purview of the Archdiocese. Catholic Archdiocese are practicing in small pods. So Milton Hopkins at O'Day described to me this week that they go in, they have three groups of four. One of them's in the center of the gym. The other's at the far end of the gym. And they're, there's outside. So it's 12 kids and they're circulating these groups of 12 kids in and out and in and out. Kennedy's doing something similar where they're actually congregating on campus. But for the most part, practices are not happening in education-based settings. They are, however, happening with clubs. So the Department of Health and the governor's office recommended no education-based athletics take place with districts in remote learning. That recommendation has shaped essentially everything we've seen this fall. But under the governor's guidance, club sports practices have been taking place in small groups. The question is, they've all been taking place with, to our knowledge, limited spread. So why can't education-based athletics take place? That's burning question number one. Why can't education-based athletics take place when club-based athletics can take place? The Seattle Times did a really good story that took a look at how clubs have operated this summer. I'll link to it in the show notes. The headline is Washington Teams Hope for Fall Games and Others Play On. It was written by Adam Jude. Todd, did you get a chance to read that article? What were your takeaways? And what do you think of this question, number one?
I did read the story. And Adam's a friend of mine. So he's kind of the GA guy for the Seattle Times. Does a great job up there. What did I think of the story? It doesn't surprise me. There's a money factor involved there. People need to, I think clubs going to always push the envelope. As long as their local officials are fine with it, and it sounds like in Sela, the key political figures were on board with some of their baseball teams, playing games in Sela, seemingly in the middle of an outbreak or them sort of emerging as one of the hot spots around the state. Yeah, I mean, again, I think a lot of this on a broader scale is optics. Does it look good for kids to play games and be in big groups when there's an outbreak? And that word is kind of, is scary to people. A lot of people would argue that it's not a good look. I think pushing the envelope is sort of a slippery slope. I think somebody has to take that dive in just to see what happens. And if it's club kids whose parents are on board with it, I mean, I hate to give you the impression that they're sort of guinea pigs in this, and I know you hate that word, but I just think if they're willing to take that dive into it, it's good to be able to gather information in the broader sense for education-based sports. Do I think that education sports, it's a little bit conservative in their approach of not allowing them to work out in pods? Yes, I do personally. I think football players, I think football teams, especially outdoor sports, should be able to do that across the board, not just in in private schools. Especially when you connect the dots on what's going on around the country with people actually playing full-fledged games. So, I mean, sooner, the state's been very conservative in its approach across the board, but sooner or later, I think they're going to need to sort of loosen the tourniquet and go where other states have already gone.
I want to take a look at this quote that was in this story in the Seattle Times. This quote was by Dr. John Dresner. He's the director of University of Washington Center for Sports Cardiology. And it's a part of the story that was focused on the soccer club Seattle United, which has just under 2,000 players on both the boys and girls side. And they trained for 2 months this summer under these COVID guidelines. And the club had told the Seattle Times that just two players tested positive for COVID-19 out of those just around 2,000. And in each of those cases, it was contracted within the community. So something that was unveiled over 2 months in the sample sizes, you know, these two positive cases were not transmitted from coach to player, player to coach, player to player. It was outside of the soccer setting. So Dresner said in this quote, he said, "I can tell you with certainty that small group training in youth soccer, when it's physically distanced and when everybody's following safety and hygiene protocols, is safe. We haven't had any transmission from player to player or coach to player. Seattle United has been a model youth program and has been a leader in the community because of that." It's worth noting Dresner, this story says, has two kids who play for the club. But that's promising. That's, you know, that's somebody who knows what they're talking about, who's saying, hey, this model works. Last week at the rally, I spoke with Puyallup senior midfielder Chloe Casello. She was at the Let Us Play rally. She came out and marched at the Capitol and voiced her support because her ECNL program, she's a college recruit, a soccer recruit, and she's been practicing all summer. And she said it's worked out great. They've done it in pods of five. I think the important part is that, you know, outside of the education-based setting, is that these players and these families, yes, there is a bottom line that needs to be met with these clubs, like you said, Todd, but there's interest from the players and families. They want to play, and they have been. So that one question, we will continue to monitor. The WIA is continuing to try to get it answered, is could schools be allowed to have practice under these guidelines that have been set by the state for clubs, for outdoor recreation? That's question number one. Let's move on to question number two. So the Department of Health has detailed under which phases sports can come back. Phase two is the welcoming of certain practices. Phase three, certain sports can come back. Some of the lower risk sports, that was in the return to play guidance that was sent out to schools earlier this summer. The sport that was not specified under that return to play guidance was football. The Department of Health still has not told the WIAA or the governor's office when it is safe for football to come back under the governor's safe start plan. So the state's top medical experts still have not provided a guidance on when football can safely return. So the question is then, when will the DOH review and release any updates to this recommendation, which they've told the WIAA they will do sometime this fall? When exactly will that happen? And the big question is, when is football, or when are we going to learn under which stage of the governor's plan football is going to return? Todd, this is a question that you and I have been trying to answer all summer. That was a glaring omission from the return to play document.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Like, we're in early September and we still don't have a guidance plan for a sport that, yeah, is a mass participation sport, but it's outdoors. And I think what sort of gets, I don't know, maybe underwritten in this is outdoor to indoor sports. And I know we're going to talk about this.
Don't you skip ahead to question number three on me.
I think it applies here. Like, yeah, we have basketball playing in phase three. We've had tournaments in phase three cities in Washington, out of state, I know of a few teams who have contracted COVID at some of these tournaments.
By teams, do you mean AAU teams? Do you mean clubs?
I'm talking about school teams.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that needs to be asked is why is basketball being allowed to play in phase three in an indoor setting where there's a lot going on, and a sport, a bigger participation sport like football outdoors, where the spacing is a little greater, still hasn't been defined. And I just don't get this. I don't get this. By comparison, I just don't understand why we have no guidance, especially with what's going on around the country. All we're asking is for a guidance plan for football. I personally think it's a sport that should come out in phase three-ish. I mean, I'd understand if it's a phase four, but I mean, if basketball is being played in phase three, I don't see why it shouldn't be, or football shouldn't be included in that phase as well.
Yeah, that's a question that we have no answers to. Neither does the WIAA. Will continue to update if some sort of answers come, but just know that the WIAA expects to hear some sort of revised plan from the Department of Health this fall. And the Department of Health is the governing body that that is dictating a lot of this, that's led by, you know, the top medical experts, the top health officials, and the top minds this state has access to. So question number three then becomes, are outdoor sports, even the ones with lots of contact like football, safer than indoor sports? When the NFHS and the Department of Health came out with its guidance that said, hey, here's all the sports that are played, and here's the risk that's associated with each of these sports for contracting and spreading the virus. We know this virus is spread through airborne particles. Here are the sports that are super high risk. Golf, will it surprise you, Todd? Very low risk. Cross country, will it surprise you? Very low risk. Football, extremely high risk. But basketball, an indoor sport with a lot of contact, was labeled as moderate risk. And that's something that the basketball season will be among the first to start under the state's plan. But something that the WIAA is doing is Executive Director Mick Hoffman is on weekly calls with other state associations, and he's hearing exactly how things are going in states that have returned to play, so that Washington can know what to expect, and essentially what to inform the Department of Health of. These are things that, you know, the WI staff hears about. Okay, you know, Utah is very open. They heard that so far this fall season, more quarantines are happening in volleyball on volleyball teams than they are on football teams. So, you know, it's a small sample size, but is that something that could potentially lend itself to suggest that football, has a lower rate of transmission than maybe an indoor sport with volleyball? Is this an outdoor-indoor thing? This is stuff that they're sending directly to the Department of Health. But this is a question that, I think the level of risk in these sports between like moderate and high with, you know, basketball and football, we did a whole podcast on it, which is the most likely to return. I think you're splitting hairs there. I think, they still don't know if outdoor sports, even the high risk ones are less, inherently less safe or more safe than indoor sports.
Yeah. I mean, you ask yourself, why is golf and cross country such a slam dunk low risk? Why are they such slam dunk low risk sports? I think A, because they're outdoors, and B, the spacing. Now, I've been at a starting line of a cross country meet where, you know, you have 60 kids waiting to start running. I mean, that's a pretty big group in a short amount of space. But, you know, we don't hear any problems with cross country just because of the spacing. Eventually in a race, you know, I don't have to go through the mechanics of a race, but what you say, especially with some of the things going on with volleyball and other indoor sports, makes sense to me. It just seems a little bit contradictory that these are such low risk sports and football has been categorized in a high risk category. Why? Because there's 30 more kids. The spacing, they can manipulate the spacing because it requires more spacing. It's outdoors. I mean, I'm not a health expert, but I think I'd rather be outdoors during a pandemic than I would be in a smaller space indoors. I don't understand it. I'm not a medical expert, and we could maybe someday have a medical expert on to explain why outdoor sports with larger student athlete populations are at greater risk. But
let's get Dr. Dresner on the podcast. He's spitting truth to the Seattle Times.
Absolutely. Come on in, Doc. We'd love to have you on our podcast. It seems a little contradictory to me. To me, if I were a parent and I had a son or daughter and one wanted to play football right now and the other wanted to, and one wanted to play volleyball, I think I would instinctually, I would have a harder time letting my daughter play volleyball than I would my son playing football, just because of the indoor outdoor thing and the space and the ventilation and the sweat transfer and we've all been in sweaty gyms. We've covered games there for many, 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 many years. I would have a harder time as a dad, as a parent, with that, grappling with that than the other one.
I hear you. Those are the three burning questions, three things that the WI is taking a hard look at this fall. We are trying to bring this, cover this story at all angles. And so what we hope to do with this conversation is just explain, how the WIA is approaching and navigating this pandemic. That's a question that we've tried to answer since things shut down right after the state basketball tournament. Concurrently, we'll be covering the efforts of this student group. What's going to happen with this open forum on Friday? So if you missed the rally or want to catch up on specifically what the athletes said, we had interviews with several high-profile athletes and people coming from different backgrounds as well, different sports from last week's rally. Those are videos you can find on our YouTube page, Scorebook Live, on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. We're trying to cover this from all angles. So if there's an angle we're missing, please reach out to us. You know how to reach us. I'm on Twitter at Andy Bueller. Todd's on Twitter with one of the better Twitter handles out there at Many Hats Millis. Today he's wearing a Cougar hat. That's no surprise. So Todd, I appreciate you walking through this with me and I'll be looking forward to seeing if we can get answers or what may come of this student group's open forum on Friday.
Yeah, again, good luck to that group. There are a lot of athletes that we cover on a full-time basis who are sharing their voices and behind the cause. And, again, whether it's checkers or chess, whether they get to play in 2020, which is more of a long shot, but trying to solidify their status for 2021 to play sports, I have a great admiration for that group as they move forward.
Absolutely. We'll be back next week. We bring one of these to you each week. We appreciate you tuning in. And if you want more, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. So for SB Live Washington, SB Live Sports, I'm Andy Bueller. He's Todd Millis. We'll catch you next time. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington. As always, a big thanks to our sponsor, Washington Federal. And thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away, written by Carl Johnson, James Schroeder, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. Talk to you next week.